Sheffield Live. Made in Sheffield, made by you.
Do you want to get your message heard? With low advertising rates and great sponsorship opportunities, Sheffield Live can help you reach thousands of local people. Get your campaign on Sheffield Live. To find out more about advertising on Sheffield Live, write to advertising@sheffieldlive.org or call 0114 281 4082.
Hello, good evening. It's Deserted Island Dis. Welcome, listeners. We're here again on a Wednesday night. So Deserted Island Dis was the show that was primarily started to encourage the Irish people of South Yorkshire to come and talk to me and tell us their life stories. But I've run out of Irish people some time ago now. So if you know any Irish people that would like to be on the show and tell us their life, please tell them to get in touch with the show. But what it has enabled me to do is give me this platform to just meet lovely, interesting people that I've met out and about around in Sheffield. And one of those people is here with me now. It's Pam Daniel. Hello, Pam.
Hello, Ben.
Thanks for coming on the show. So just a bit of an introduction. So Pam now has her own business doing mentoring. What go on, what other things, and it's kind of your
my own business, Pam Daniel Consulting. I do coaching and mentoring. I sort of do, I'm a guest speaker, I'm a facilitator, I sort of host things, a bit of consultancy, so I've done sort of projects to do with homelessness and all sorts of weird and wonderful things, but predominantly I want to be a coach and mentor. That's what I, where my heart is, really, I'd say, Ben.
Yeah, so we first met, I saw you was not quite next to Prince William, was it?
But not quite.
But you were working for the Royal Foundation, who have put some money into homelessness in a few places, but just chose Sheffield specifically, and they're trying to help Sheffield with homelessness. And Pam has been helping that Royal Foundation, particularly around EDI, Equality, Diversity and Inclusion, as to say.
Yeah.
And you were there standing up in front of 100 people.
That sounds like me.
Telling how we should do it better.
Yeah, it was about homelessness prevention. Yeah, that's right. Yeah, fantastic project. And yeah, an honour to be asked to do that work.
But we were talking earlier, really, and we were kind of trying to describe to listeners kind of about your life. And I think you said it was that you're really kind of pleased with your life and grateful, and you, but it's a tale of triumph over adversity.
Absolutely, yeah. I mean, I've got a great life, as you will hear, really, but it's not been easy. But I'm in a great place now, and yeah, it'd be lovely to share a story and hopefully inspire some others out there.
So that's what we do, listeners. So we've got an hour to talk about Pam's life, and she's also going to, she's picked some great songs for us to listen to, and songs that mean a lot to her as well. But so let's start at the beginning, Pam. So you're born in 1971, was it?
I was born in 1971. I was born here in Sheffield, Ben.
In Sheffield, not Rotherham?
Not Rotherham. I was born here in Sheffield, under the viaduct, as I like to say.
Okay.
Yeah.
And, well, just tell us about your parents and then moving to Rotherham, as well.
Yeah. So my parents came from, they were immigrants from Pakistan, from a very small village, came over to Sheffield, like a lot of people came to. My father came to work in the steel industry, and we lived in Sheffield. So I've only actually lived in Sheffield properly until I was four.
Yeah.
And then we moved over to Rotherham, so another part of South Yorkshire.
Yeah.
And I was pretty much brought up in Rotherham, really. And my parents came from Pakistan to Sheffield. I can only now, as an adult, look back and think how sort of a culture shock that must have been. They left, I had an older sister, well, I have an older sister that was left in Pakistan.
Wow.
So the contrast, and I was born, as I say, I was born in Sheffield. So the contrast between my older sister and myself, and it's just the roll of a dice, it's sliding doors, you know, and that is not lost on me. It's never been lost on me. It's something that I've carried, and I think it's kept me grounded. And that could have quite easily have been me. My elder sister still lives in Pakistan, and relatively to her, you know, I won the lottery because I was born in the UK, really, and I turned a tap and there was running water, which my sister did not have.
Do you have much contact with that sister?
No. We'll come to all of this. Yeah. No.
But was it kind of rural place that she grew up in. Yeah,
like. Yeah. My parents came from a rural village in France. Like a lot of the community actually here in South Yorkshire.
Yeah.
A lot of the Pakistani community. That was the case really. So very, very. You can't even imagine what my life must have been like for my parents when they got off that plane and came to live in Tinsley in Sheffield in 1970s. The National Front marching outside the door, remember, you know.
Yeah. So did they know they was coming to, did they have the job before he left Pakistan?
I think so. I mean, we were only children, so
did
we
did they have other family, like, it was like...
I think there were, there were other family already here. There was a big sort of contingent, I've only found this out recently, that moved from Pakistan to Sheffield and to places like Bradford and what... because there was a huge dam built in Pakistan where my parents lived, and the British were building this huge dam called Mangla Dam, and they were given this opportunity to start afresh. So masses of villagers were picked up and brought to sort of Sheffield and Bradford, and so people knew each other.
Because the villages were getting...
They were going to be flooded because this dam was going to be created. So an opportunity was given to them, and my father... My parents took that opportunity, really, so our lives would have been very, very different.
Yeah.
I wouldn't be here then.
No, you wouldn't be in the studio. No. So growing up in Rotherham.
Yeah.
So you were in Kimberworth, I think.
I went to Kimberworth Comprehensive, yeah.
In the 70s.
Yeah.
But, and was it a council housing? It's a big...
There was poverty, absolutely. Yeah. You know, we were never wealthy at all. But I feel back then we were all poor, so we never really noticed that we were poor. It wasn't a thing, really. I didn't feel that growing up, really. But I loved school. Home life was very Asian and very sort of strict, I suppose. Which as a child you sort of thought, oh, why have I got to do this, and why can't I go out to the cinema, and why can't I, you know? And there was sort of almost like a battle going on within my own mind, and because I just wanted to do what my friends at school were doing, you know. And not really understanding, as an adult with more compassionate eyes, I can see that my parents were probably petrified, that their daughters were going to, I don't know what, really. So I felt like my life was quite suppressed, and I wasn't really allowed to sort of shine and be who I want to be. Wasn't allowed sort of opinions, and probably why I'm so opinionated now, Ben. But
You were the older one in the house. Obviously, you had an older sister.
There was plenty of us. There was others, brothers and sisters around. Yeah. I was one of them. I was the first to be born in Sheffield, really. Okay. So, I had an older sister in Sheffield. She's 3 years older than me, and she had, I suppose you would call it an arranged marriage when she was 17, and I was 14 at the time, and I remember thinking, that's not for me. I can't see me doing that. And she married somebody from Pakistan, and he came over, and that's not what I wanted for my life. I'm quite strong-willed, and I don't like being told what to do.
But what I'm trying to get is, I'm trying to understand, is why you were different to your sister, are you different to everyone, all your siblings? Really?
I think that's a really good question, Ben. I think I am. I've never been able to name it. There's something in me that is different, and I do have quite a strong view, strong values, strong. Yeah. You know, it's not necessarily a negative thing, but I don't like being told what to do. Injustice. So in the last year, actually, I've been pretty much told I've got ADHD. And with ADHD, injustice is a big deal. Mm. And I wish I could just let things go, but I cannot stand injustice. And that might have had something to do with it, but I didn't know that until recently. Yeah.
Understanding that.
Yeah, so I'm very different from my siblings, I would have said, yeah.
Well, I'm sure we'll explore that further, but it's time for a song.
Oh, yes, yes. So, absolutely. In my childhood, the first record I ever had, and this was a big part of my life, and it was Terence Trent D'Arby, If You Let Me Stay. Yeah.
Yeah, so let's play that one. Great song from that era.
Sweetheart, listen. I know the last few things haven't been good for the both of us, and I've caused you a lot of grief. But put those bags down, okay? Before you make a decision like that, please just listen to me, because I don't want to leave.
Terence Trent D'Arby. I remember that from my childhood too.
Oh, great, wow.
Great song.
Yeah, loved him.
And you had some, I suppose, poignance in the title as well, you're saying.
Indeed. If you let me stay, stay, and stay is what I didn't do. I did not stay, Ben. I decided to go, really.
Yeah. So go on, talk us through what happened.
Yeah, so I thought when I was getting towards the age of 18, I could see my future written out by other people. And I wanted to write my own future, whether that was good or bad or whatever happened. It was about a very important word is choice.
Yeah.
I wanted to make my own choices, so I didn't want a forced marriage. So I meticulously planned my escape, and I ran away from home.
Okay.
Yeah, at the age of 18.
So let's kind of just go back a bit then. So you must have, you said you were enjoying school. So you did okay at school?
I did very well at school, actually.
Yeah.
School was my joy. I arrived at school half an hour early. I had great friends at school.
Yeah. And so you got like GCSEs, O-levels, and then A-levels?
No. I left, believe it or not, so I did very well with my GCSEs. I was the first girl in the history of Kimberworth Comprehensive, first Asian girl, sorry, in the history of Kimberworth Comprehensive to get a GCSE in English and Maths. And
right.
My teacher, Mr. Marsden, told me that before I sat my exams, so that gave me the little push. So shout out to him if he's still around.
Yeah.
And then I went to Rockingham College. Do you remember that? Is it still there? In Lothar-upon-Dearne. I had ideas of becoming a policewoman, believe it or not.
Right.
And so I did more GCSEs and fitness stuff and all of this. But then just after I turned 18, I decided that the time was to go before I got married off, really. So I left, meticulously planned my route, and I ran.
So you didn't finish your studies?
I got a couple of more GCSEs in a year. I got law and something else, really. So I've got quite a lot of GCSEs. But no, then after that, I didn't have the opportunity.
So what was the plan? What did your parents have planned for you then?
Well, parents would have had planned for me, I'm guessing, exactly what they had for my sister and others, relatives, really, that they would have found a man in Pakistan, and I would have not met him or known him, and that would have been my husband, who I probably would have met on my wedding day.
Yeah, and so that's not for me.
Absolutely not for me. No, so I, meticulously planned what I was going to do. But I was aware, Ben, I wasn't naive. I was aware that when I make that decision, if I go, I go, and I'd be out on my own pretty much for the rest of my life. I did know that.
It's a huge thing. And was you able to confide in anyone? Did you have like a best friend that you could tell?
I had good friends at college. I was at Rockingham. I had good friends there, but they were white British, not from an Asian household, really. And they were very supportive. But it was, at the end of the day, my decision, my own thinking. It'd been going on in my head for years and years, but I just wasn't allowed. I didn't verbalise that. I had a lot of questions about my upbringing, but I just quietly kept that to myself. I kept my mouth shut and thought, this is not for me, you know. And if it is for you, great, but it was not for me.
So what did you do then practically?
Practically, I got a job. I went to London. I told my parents I was going to college for the day, and I actually went to London and had two job interviews and came back. And I got both the jobs, and they were in. So I needed a job, and I needed somewhere to live. So I went from Rotherham, Kimberworth in Rotherham, to West Kensington, Ben.
Nice.
And I worked, took by contrast, and I worked at the Hilton Olympia on Kensington High Street. And I had somewhere to live, and I had a job, and I had money, obviously. But I was out on my own. I left with one suitcase.
Yeah.
And thinking, knowing that I would probably never, ever see my family ever again. I was in fear. I was very, very, very fearful, and I remained fearful for most of my life because you hear about something called honour killings.
Yeah, yeah.
I don't know if you're aware of that.
Of course, yeah.
That kind of thing, which still very, very sadly happens to this day. So
what did you tell your parents? Anything?
I didn't.
Did you sneak out in the morning?
Pretty much, yeah. It's a bit more complicated than that, but pretty much. So they would have had the biggest shock of their lives.
Yeah. And there's obviously no mobile phones?
No, but I didn't want to be found. I went far because I was scared, really.
I suppose I don't want to kind of jump to the end a bit, but let's wait and see. We'll come back to it about you kind of, because I wanted to ask you kind of Because you're not just leaving your parents, you're leaving your siblings and
community and everything. My siblings, and I had nephews and nieces that were born in the house. That was very difficult to leave them.
So brave, but difficult.
Determined.
Times. I think let's play your next song.
Go on.
And we'll carry on the chat.
Do you want me to talk a bit about this next song so that it leads into this song? So I've always had a love of Bruce Springsteen. So the song is Dancing in the Dark. But how it came back into my life, if you like, was sort of a few years ago when the film came out, Blinded by the Light, preceded by the book Greetings from Bury Park by Sarfraz Manzoor, who writes for The Guardian and various other things. He's a writer. He's of Pakistani origin, and he was born in 1971. Me and Sarfraz are the same age. And when I saw the film, I just cried. I saw the film four times. I went to Luton to meet Sarfraz.
Wow.
And basically, his story resonated with my story. It was just a different town.
Yeah.
And he was wanting to live his life. He wanted to go to university and be who he wanted to be. And his father had very, very much his plans for what Sarfraz was going to do, really. So, yeah, and the words of Bruce Springsteen speak to him, and, yeah, I'll leave it at that.
it's a great film if anyone's not seen it. This is Dancing in the Dark, Bruce Springsteen.
I get up in and I ain't got nothing to say. I come home in the morning, I go to bed feeling the same way. I ain't nothing but tired. Man, I'm just tired and bored with myself. Hey there, baby, I could use just a little help. You can't start a fire. You can't start a fire without a spark. This gun's for hire. Just dancing in the dark. Messages keep getting clearer. Radio's on and I'm moving around the place. I check my look in the mirror. Wanna change my clothes, my hair, my face, and I ain't getting nowhere. I'm just living in a dump like this. There's something happening somewhere. Baby, I just know the case. You can't start a fire. You can't start a fire without a spark. This gun's for hire. Even if we're just dancing in the dark. Kiss the wine and it's on me. I shake this world off my shoulders. Come on, baby, the laugh's on me. Stay on the streets of this town, and they'll be carving you up all right. You say you gotta stay hungry. Hey, baby, I'm just a fast starting tonight. I'm dying for some action. I'm sick of sitting around here trying to write this book. I need a little.
Springsteen,
yeah.
Dancing in the Dark. That's the choice of Pam Daniel, my guest tonight on Deserted Island Disc. How am I feeling?
Great, loving it. God, a bit of Bruce, love him.
Yes. So we're talking about Pam's life. We've got to the age of 18 where you made the huge decision to leave your Asian Muslim family back in Rotherham. So you kind of just disappeared from their lives. Did they look for you?
I think they did. But I was petrified then, you know. So I was out on my own. No support, out on my own, really. So I never had the opportunity to go to university or to carry on. It was just survival, trying to, live, really. A word that was used many years later in my life is hypervigilance. So I've sort of lived my life in a hypervigilant state. So you're looking around the corner, is somebody there? Is there an uncle? Is there a taxi driver? I've lived that life for 35 years, which takes something out of you, I would say, really. So that's been a big deal, deal. I've carried that all my life. So I've pretty much never had anything to do with my family ever again. It's just been me out on my own, pretty much. The age of 19, I was a vulnerable child, really.
Well, I was going to say, because you moved to London.
Yeah.
Not knowing anyone.
No.
Was you able to make friends at work and stuff? I
was working in a hotel, don't forget. Yeah. So there was a lot of foreign Australians and things doing the same. So and I'm a very, very friendly person. So that making friends has never been a problem in my life, which has been brilliant. But I was very vulnerable, because my parents didn't really allow me out of the house, apart from pretty much to go to school. I wasn't streetwise. I'd got no idea. I'd never dated or done any of that, never been to parties. So I'd got no idea, really. And then at the age of 19, as a vulnerable child, I met a man and spent, many, many years of my life with this man, really. He was sort of 10 years older than me. And at the age of 20, he asked me if I wanted to go and live in France.
Okay.
For 6 months. And 6 months turned into 19 years, Ben.
Okay, yeah.
So many people don't know that. So not many people realise I have this sort of a French side.
Yeah.
So I'm very hard to pigeonhole. Yeah. So at the age of 20, I left the UK and went to live in the Dordogne in the south of France.
Sounds lovely.
It sounds wonderful, idyllic, beautiful, beautiful, beautiful part of the world, absolutely. And there was a lot I took away from that, a lot I learnt in my French years, if you like, really. Yeah. We lived in rural France. We had fantastic neighbours. We learnt a lot from French farming neighbours, really, about what's important in life.
Yeah.
And I think, dare I say, I feel like in Britain we've forgotten that.
Yeah.
And sort of consumer society that we are here was not what I saw then.
Yeah.
So my outlook in life is somewhat different, and I think the values of my parents, to be fair, have made me who I am, and the values that I saw in rural France as well has really made me who I am as well.
I don't know a lot about French, but just kind of what would you mean by that?
Because we lived in rural France, and I'm sure it'd be very, very different in the big cities. Our neighbours were sort of French farmers, and their lives were very simple, and they sort of had their animals and they grew whatever, and the life was about the quality of food that they ate, and they didn't sort of go to supermarkets and buy. All we do here is buy and buy and buy, and we think that's what's going to make us happy, and obviously it doesn't. And I know that, and I feel very lucky that I know that. So I feel like I've always felt a bit of an odd bod my entire life. I still do, really, but I think all of these things add to that. Another real positive about being in France is there was a sort of an expat community there. Although I did speak fluent French, I learned French when I got there. But at our table, we had various people. I think in Britain, we tend to mix with our peers. Yeah. So if you're a white British middle-class man, you're going to have people that work in your whatever and from your school or whatever. But there, it wasn't that. So we had, at a table, we had a baroness sitting at the table, and we had a street drinker sitting at the table. And I was 20 when I went out there. And that doesn't happen. And I think I learnt a lot from that. And that's carried me throughout my life. And I can just talk to anybody and adapt to anybody. And everybody's equal. And nobody's bigger or cleverer or better than anybody else. And I think that's been a great thing in my life.
Yeah, great. Mm. And while you're there, is that when you got married and had children?
We went travelling around India and Nepal for 5 months and got married on the beach in Goa in 1995.
Again, sounds amazing.
So sounds great, doesn't it? Yeah. And then let's fast forward. So go on.
Well, is that about your next song choice, is it?
Yes. I'm going to talk a little bit about children. So after about 12 years, we decided to absolutely have my daughter. So my daughter Yasmin was born in 2003. And we'd been together for 12 years. She could not have been more wanted, more loved. And she's an amazing, this is the bit where I cry when I talk about my children.
We're allowed to.
We all think our children are absolutely amazing, obviously. But my children are absolutely amazing. And I just wanted to talk a little bit about that. I could not be more prouder of my daughter. And I'll go on to talk about my son. She is an incredible human being. She's a mini version of me. And we've had our clashes, my God. Teenage years and menopause years clashing in the same house. Yeah. That was great joy. But she's turned into the most incredible human being, and I could not be more proud of my daughter. And she's going on to do, my parents were illiterate, I didn't say that. And my children, Ben, had interviews for Oxford and Cambridge University. And the only thing between my children and my parents is me.
You know.
And you can, the change that can happen in a generation is incredible, really.
That's...
And my daughter's going to go on. I won't say too much, but she's made some decisions, and she's going to go on to do humanitarian work abroad.
Right.
She speaks three languages. She's teaching herself Portuguese. I've always said my children will do incredible things in this world, and she's absolutely proving me right. I'm going to come on to my son. I'm being very honest. I always envisaged having one child.
Okay.
And my daughter was born, and 14 months later, I was pregnant with my son, and that was a surprise. He does know this, so I told him this year. And when my son was born, literally the moment he was born, I looked at him, and I thought, he was the most beautiful thing I've ever seen in my life.
Oh.
And he is an incredible human being, and... both my children are my absolute joy, and my son is fighting his own little battle, but he will absolutely get there, and he will absolutely do great things in this world. And neither of them are driven by money. They are both driven by doing fantastic things and changing people's lives. And I cannot wait to see what my son is going to do, really. And this brings us to this incredible song by Roberta Flack, and it is First Time I Saw Your Face.
The first time ever I saw thought the sun rose in your eyes, and the moon and the stars were the dark and the endless skies. And the first time ever I kissed trembling heart of a captive bird that was there at my.
Roberta Flack, you've got to play that song right to the end. That's the best bit there. So
it is.
No, thanks. Yeah, Choice of Pam Daniels. You're on a Deserted Island Disc. We're over halfway through. And we've got so much more to talk about. So, Pam, what do you want to talk about next?
Gosh, a beautiful song. Yeah, well, that song was, yeah, about my son Remy, really. I suppose I should come to next. So then the next stage in my life is like another chapter, another volume in my book, if I ever was to write books. So in 2009, we came back from France and marriage was sort of on the rocks. We came back as a family to live in the UK.
Okay.
And the marriage ended quite quickly after getting to the UK. And long story short, I was left with two children, Yasmin and Remy, who were 4 and 5 years old. And two bags of clothes.
Okay.
So started life from pretty much scratch, really. I had no confidence. You wouldn't recognise the person I was then. I think that's the story as well.
Yeah.
Because nobody would believe that if you saw me now.
Yeah.
So I had very, very little confidence and had absolutely no money, and life was sort of turned upside down, really. But we made a home. We made
where were you?
Just outside. We ended up just outside Sheffield, so okay. Sort of coming back to what feels like home, but which might sound a bit weird because, you know, I was still living this hypervigilance, fearful of my family.
I was going to say, yeah, it's like that thing, because I presume then you partner, husband, was from down south, was he?
He was from south of England.
So when you
yeah.
came back from France, did you live in the south first?
We did, yeah. And then we were going to settle up even further north. We were going to settle in Northumberland, actually.
Right.
And then I ended up coming here. I say here, just over the border, northeast Derbyshire, actually, not officially Sheffield.
Right.
And
why? Yeah, go on, why?
Because that was a place that I was allocated, because we had nowhere particularly to live.
By
a housing association.
Okay. So what in it did you approach
which housing association?
No, which so yeah, how, I don't know how. So presumably you kind of somewhere down south and said, oh, we need somewhere to live, and they said, oh, we've got a We've got properties.
No, we were here actually, yeah. So we'd come to visit friends, a friend in Rotherham.
Okay.
And we'd got sort of plans as a family to go and live in Northumberland, and that was all planned. And the kids were going to start school in Northumberland. Okay. But then the marriage ended, and then we had to sort of find somewhere else, and it was sort of plan B, really. So this was it,
so
yeah.
You're in this region. Is it kind of school friends or whatever, or people you knew?
School friends, yeah. I had a friend from school, yeah. And I thought, well, this feels like home. Ended up starting from scratch. I remember we were very, very lucky to get a flat. Yeah. And we sat on a picnic blanket on the floor and started life from there.
Yeah, so no furniture.
Nothing then. And Yasmin and Remy were 4 and 5 and slowly started rebuilding my life and trying to do absolutely the best for them. And that was 18 years ago, really. So I've been a single parent for 18 years and brought them up on my own. And obviously I've got no family and still living that hypervigilant state. They did see their father. Their father decided to go back to the south of France. So they'd seen him in school holidays. But financially sort of unsupported. So I was sort of on my own trying to do everything. And with divorce, you lose friends and you lose sort of, people for whatever reason decide to take sides. There was nobody particularly to, reason to take sides, but you sort of lose your home, you lose that as well. The kids went into fantastic schools and did well. And then it was me, well, what am I going to do? What am I going to do? Career, there wasn't even a career. I did various things in the south of France. And I'm thinking, well, who's going to give me a job? And obviously I've got a 4-year-old and a 5-year-old. And I started volunteering. And I've been a huge ambassador for volunteering. I've been volunteering for nearly 20 years consistently, and I still do. And I would recommend it to anybody. And I started off in a women's conversation club in Low Edges. And it changed my life, really. And I was just smiling and making cups of tea. And I met the most incredible women, who I still see now, actually. And when I see them, they say to me, Ben, they say that I am their inspiration. And I would say completely the opposite. I would say that I have been so inspired by those women that you would not believe. And they've brought so much to my life. Honestly, it's just unbelievable how inspiring those women are. And
so you started off like saying, okay, I'm going to volunteer for this local group.
Yeah.
And you started off, helping, making tea, administrative kind of
just,
stuff.
Just smiling, chatting to women, getting them to speak English. English wasn't their first language. This is while my son's in nursery and my daughter's in infant school and I've got no car and I've got no money and no nothing. And from there, somebody saw something in me that I absolutely didn't see in myself. And they said, you should apply for this. And I ended up working in the Burn Grieve area of Sheffield, working one-to-one as a health trainer, supporting people to make positive changes in their lives. Something that's carried through with me. I've always been a bit of a runner and I've always been interested in health and well-being. It's a passion of mine. So I was helping people with that. And then a job came up as a manager in the charity that I volunteered for.
Yeah.
And they said, Pam, we want you to apply for this job. And I thought they were joking. I was thinking, what on earth? They think I can be the health manager. And lo and behold, I applied. I got the job and I cried. There's a lot of crying. And I did that job, dare I say, very, very successfully for about 8 years. My heart and my passion. I was there today, actually. It was in Low Edges. And that community is just an incredible community that sometimes is overlooked, but the sense of community there and my heart is just there, honestly. And I did everything, and this injustice that I was talking about, the most vulnerable of society, really, and they'd give anything to anybody else, and that's a joy to work in those kind of communities. And what I learned there, I then carried forward to do other things, and I was sort of almost like headhunted by Voluntary Action Sheffield. The wonderful Helen Sims wanted me to do engagement really across the city to do with race.
Yeah.
So I left to do that, and I still remember everything I've learned. And I still, so somebody who didn't have opinions and who couldn't say what she wanted as a child, you have a job shutting me up now because I'm Helen would have described me as an influencer in the city to do with homelessness, to do with race equality, to do with, an ally for our LGBTQ+ friends, all of these things for, it's just I just can't help myself.
Yeah.
So I've tried and fight the cause and try and make change. And because I've been there, I've been, lived it, got the lived experience, obviously, but worked within those communities, really. And I can stand up on stage, Ben, as you know, because you saw me in front of 200 people, and I'm not fazed by that. And that is what they call a soft power, and if I can use that to better and to bring awareness and fight the cause for, to do with diversity in leadership, to do with people with lived experience, you know, that's a wonderful thing. And you know, moving forward to where the kind of work I'm doing now, I've been sort of the chair of the steering group of the Poverty Truth Commission in Sheffield, the Sheffield Poverty, which is just an absolutely fantastic thing to be even part of, let alone to be chairing. And that's changing policy in Sheffield for people to do with poverty. And that will carry on, Ben. That will be like
it's
a leg.
It's hugely important, really. It's so many massive people on that.
Massive, and that, you know, the way that's been done, I'd encourage anybody to download the, you know, the recommendations and learn and read from that, really. And there is so much poverty around, and I've done so much work that I'm so proud of, really.
Too much for us. Well, what I want to do, Pam, we've got a bit of a plan. What I'm going to do, I'm going to play the next song without you introducing it.
Go on.
And then you're going to tell us why you've picked this one to get to the next stage. And then we'll come back, hopefully finish up the show to talk about your work now and what, how you're doing,
people
can get in touch with you and stuff like that. So let's play the next song, which is a beautiful song, which is by a local artist, Jack T. Harper, and it's I Don't Want Your Sister Love.
I don't want your sister love, I just want to take you in my arms.
Harper there,
Jack.
I'd say, and I used to see him doing the open mic nights and stuff around Sheffield. Yeah. I've seen him for a few years, but you know him?
Yeah, Jack's a friend. Jack's an incredible, beautiful human being, yeah. And I've heard him sing this song many, many, many times live, and it just goes through me. It's just breathtakingly beautiful, the way he sings it, actually, which is much better than that version, seeing him live. Yeah.
Does he have a hat?
Yes. You need him here, actually. You need to interview him.
We could get him on and get him to play a few songs live.
Yeah.
So go on. So tell us the story, particularly why you put that apart from knowing Jack.
Yeah. So Sister Love and Sister. So you remember me saying, Ben, that I hadn't had anything to do with my family for like 38 years.
Yeah.
There is a slight caveat. About 3 years ago, a friend of a friend of a friend very suddenly came up to me and told me that he'd had news and told me that my parents had died, and so that was completely and utterly out of the blue, as you can imagine. Wow. Because I'd had nothing to do with my family for forever, really.
Yeah.
So that was really difficult. You can't even imagine. So going through grief alone. I've been single for forever, it feels like. But then it's important for me to say that I got support, Ben, through a fantastic charity in Sheffield called Roshni,
yeah,
who support women, South Asian women, and they do incredible work. Yeah. They've been around for 30 years and they have a fabulous reputation. And I had 10 sessions of counselling paid for, and their lead counsellor, Shireen, changed my life.
Yeah.
I carried a lot of shame and a lot of guilt and of leaving my family, leaving all of that. And as a Muslim hijab wearing woman, the counsellor, she explained a lot of things to me and let me take off that heavy coat, really, yeah, let's say. So I move forward in my life.
Well, your parents have been passed away dead for a few years.
I found out 3 years ago, but they'd actually died about, I don't know, 16 and 10 years ago. They'd been dead a very long time, but I only found out. So that was, you know, me going through that grief, and I got great support from work, I have to say. And Roshni were fantastic.
Yeah.
But I'm going to fast forward now, Ben, to a very specific day. And that day was the 18th of December, 2024. And I was having a very, very rare Christmas day at Christmas time without my children. So I decided to go on holiday in Turkey. And I was in this beautiful hotel in Turkey. And I woke up and it was the 18th of December. It's a Wednesday. I thought, oh, it's my sister's birthday. So I've always remembered my parents and my siblings' birthdays. And I have a sister who's also called Yasmin. My daughter is called Yasmin and my sister is called Yasmin, but obviously I hadn't seen my sister forever.
Yeah.
And 4 hours later, Ben, my sister was stood in front of me in that hotel in Turkey.
How could that happen?
Well, yes, you tell me how that could happen. it sounds like I'm making that up, but that's what happened. So after my entire life pretty much feeling like I'm on my own and I've been out on my own, I had this connection with my sister. So Sister Love, my sister, I've had this reunion with my family and it's been very positive.
Bump into her?
She recognised me. I wouldn't have recognised her.
So you just bumped into each other in Turkey?
Wow. Yeah. She was in the same hotel.
Wow.
Yeah.
On her birthday?
On her birthday. Yeah.
That is a mad coincidence, isn't it?
Yeah, you couldn't make that up, really. So my sister and her beautiful family.
So what did she say when she recognised you?
She said, it's me. She said something like, do you know it's my birthday? I said, yes. I was in shock, to be honest.
Yeah, of course.
Because I didn't cry, because I cry at everything. So that was, and it was beautiful, luxurious time that we had. We were able to spend together because there was no work and no nothing. So they've been back in my life for about a year and a half now, and obviously met my children. So my daughter Yasmin met her auntie Yasmin and my son, and it was all bonkers but lovely.
Yeah, I was going to say, yeah, I can't think of a word, but that would mess with your mind.
Oh yeah, oh yeah, yes, yeah, yeah. It was a gentle kind of introduction, and just been to a family wedding, which I never ever thought. And my children are mixed race, so they've not really had anything to do with their Asian side at all. And we've just literally last weekend went to my nephew's wedding, and just incredible, really. And the love, I mean, a lot of parents back in the day, we didn't talk about love, and certainly not an Asian thing. It's not, you know, nobody would tell anybody that they love them, really. But you showed it in other ways, really. And I've done quite a sort of a lot of research almost into this, really. And there's different parts, types of love. And I felt like there wasn't much love. I felt at the time there wasn't much love in my life. Yeah. But actually, I found out through various things and that there's all sorts of different kind of love, you know, love that from friends, love, you know, without having romantic love in your life, and love for your siblings. And it's there, yeah. Even if we don't say it, really. So that's really, really something really, really important. And I probably didn't tell my children I love them enough, because it wasn't, I don't know, something that
that's
was
that something ever. That said, yeah,
so you sort of beat yourself
kind
up
of an
about
Irish
that.
Thing of that as well,
is it, right? Yeah. They don't tell them you love them, yeah. But yes. I, you know, could not love my children more, really. And of course I love my sister and my nephews and nieces, and yeah, so that's really important to say. So gonna fast forward back to where I was with my career and my life, and trying to be a guest speaker and trying to influence change and improve other people's lives, and think, look at me and look at what I've done. If I can do it, you can do it. And then I was given this opportunity through Voluntary Action Sheffield, Ben, a few years ago, for somebody that didn't go to university, that I never felt, you know, I always felt at a disadvantage. Oh, I can't be bright because I've not been to university. And I was given the opportunity to do, well, what you would call a level 5, a degree. And I met my tutor, a wonderful lady called Hannah Butler. And I told her my life and what had happened. And she said, Pam, you're not doing a degree. The experience that you have is the equivalent of 4 degrees. You're going straight to a master's. You're going straight to a level 7.
Right.
So, Ben, 3 years ago, I did a level 7 in executive coaching and mentoring whilst having a job, whilst having 3 voluntary jobs, and whilst having bringing up my 2 children.
Wow. Yes.
I can't believe I did it. Yeah.
Well, I was going to say it sounds like fun, but it's not. No. It's been my nightmare. But yeah.
There was a lot of procrastination for somebody that's now got an ADHD or knows that I've got an ADHD brain, but I did it. And it was about coaching and mentoring. And that is what I am. I'm a coach and mentor. It's my passion, Ben, but it's also my livelihood. So it's how. So I gave up my job.
Yeah.
Just under two years ago, very brave. I thought, yeah, literally. And I started my own business, but Pam Daniel Consulting, and this is what I want to do.
Yes. Well, let's just play your last song.
Yeah.
And then I'm going to come back and give you a proper chance to talk about you.
Yeah.
Yeah, current, what you're up to these days.
Yeah, all right. Fabulous.
So play Single Ladies. Does that speak for itself?
We know what it does.
Say Single Ladies. That's the final choice of Pam Daniel, my guest tonight on Deserted Island Day. So it's gone quick, the hour.
Oh yes, I'm not surprised. There's a lot to say. I could have had 3 hours, Ben.
But I suppose what we wanted to say is kind of what life is like these days, what you're up to.
Yeah.
The floor is yours.
Thank you. Thank you very much. Thank you. Yeah. Well, Beyonce, all the single ladies. I heard a rumour, Ben, that if you come to this studio here, you get marriage proposals.
Is that right? Yes, well... I can only do one.
Yeah. That's what your fiancé told me.
Yes.
Anyway, yes, absolutely. I'm still a single lady, but importantly, very happy. You know, somebody called me recently the epitome of singlehood, really. And I feel very, very blessed. I feel very, very lucky. I have a fantastic life, Ben. And I think I've achieved so much. I've travelled. I've done everything with very, very little money. I could literally write a book about living with no money whatsoever. But yeah, from my career point of view, I think what I want to sort of get out there is through my coaching and mentoring, through my being a guest speaker, is to empower others, particularly women, but everybody, you know, people from disadvantaged backgrounds, really. I believe if I can do it, gosh, you can do it, you know. And I have this passion and belief in wanting people to change their lives and make the difference. And another thing from my culture is that when you sort of a woman got to like the age of 50, you've lived your life and you sort of almost sort of sat in a chair and waited to die. I couldn't be the opposite. I feel like my life is beginning, really, and with my career, I'm wanting to make changes in people's lives to get them to see the potential. I think people come to a crossroads, and there's a lot of people that aren't happy.
Is it part also like your children growing up now?
Absolutely.
Maybe this is like your time that you've
100%. Yeah. My daughter's 23. My son's 21. I brought them up on my own for 18 years. This is time for me. And what do I want to achieve? And what legacy do I want to leave in the world? That's really, really important. Yeah. And if I drop dead tomorrow, Ben, I've had a fantastic life. Yeah. I really, really have.
It's a nice thing to be able to say.
Yeah. I imagine there's not many that can say that. But yeah, that's truly how I feel. But I feel there is a lot more in me. And I want to go out there and change the world and influence people to better their lives. Yeah, it's really important.
But also you need to be paid.
Yes. Yeah,
and
I do.
I mean, we didn't really talk about it much, but that kind of braveness, again, to leave a paid job salary where you've got all the things involved in that, and you went self-employed,
Yes, absolutely self-employed, set myself up. We've got my friend Jack to blame for that, though, T. Harper, because he said with an ADHD brain, you're not going to do it if you've still got a part-time job, so it has to be all or nothing, and that's what I did. So I don't have an income.
So, well, I think you've got 20 seconds to say how people can get in touch with you. If do you want to hire you for...
Oh yeah, I've got a website. If you Google Pam Daniel Consulting, you'll find me. I'm on Instagram. It'd be absolutely lovely to hear from you.
So thanks, Pam. That's been wonderful. So that's it for Deserted Dish tonight. So have a good evening.